I'm speaking today with Gene Wu, who is running for House District 137. This May. Gene, why are you running for this office?
Well, Charles, this is something that I've wanted to do for a long time. You know, from an early age, my parents basically taught me, you know, probably as part of the Asian culture is, you know, you always put your community over yourself. You know, and I really took that to heart. And, you know, when I was when I grew up in Houston, you know, I was raised Christian. And I was taught that, you know, as a Christian, the greatest thing one can do in this life is to sacrifice yourself for other people, to give yourself in service to those who need it, to those around you, to show your love for your fellow man. And that's something I've really taken to heart, and I've tried to exemplify that in my life.
Okay. You currently work for the Harris County District Attorney's Office as a prosecuting attorney. Tell me a little bit about what you do.
You know, that's probably it's probably the toughest job I've ever done in my life, and I've done some tough jobs. Right now, I'm a felony prosecutor, which means I'm a felony number three prosecutor, and that basically means that I handle every case other than rape and murder, or armed robbery. It means managing about probably 95% of a court's docket in a felony district court. Everything from starting the file, filing charges, all the way to dealing with a plea agreement, to trying the case, putting someone on trial.
You know, it seems that while there's been some advances made in the legislature in terms of, you know, exoneration and innocence, it seems like anytime you talk to somebody who's in the ledge or who wants to be in the ledge about a criminal justice matter, they talk about wanting to make something a crime or to enhance the penalty for something that's already a crime.
Right.
You're kind of on the business end of that. Well, what's your view on that?
You know, I think many prosecutors and many defense attorneys will all agree Texas already has enough laws. You know, just plain and simple, there are enough things that are crimes. There's crimes that people don't know are crimes. You know, because someone's passed a bill that made some strange thing a crime that we don't quite know about. The penal code, if you look in Vernon's code, is massive. It is huge. It is one of the largest sections of code that Texas has. You know, people talk about being tough on crime, and they talk about exactly as you say. They talk about let's put more laws on the books. Let's just make this crime, you know, have a harsher punishment. We can keep doing that. Well, what's the end game? Well, then the end game is everything is just going to be a first degree felony, and we're going to put people in prison for life or just for everything. Okay, that's the end result. Instead, you know, let's do better policing. Let's do better law enforcement. Let's make our laws dealing with criminal matters makes sense, you know, for the 21st century. Simply saying you're tough on crime and simply saying that I'm going to make this this crime an even harsher punishment does not really get us anywhere. You know, a lot of the things that people do, and I've seen this on a daily basis, they do because they're dumb. You know, they do it because they didn't think about it. They do it because, you know, basically, you know, if they sat there and thought about the consequences, if they had that kind of foresight, they probably wouldn't have done it in the first place. But they don't have that kind of foresight. A lot of the things we're dealing with are drug-related, you know, personal use amounts of drugs. A lot of the things we deal with are crimes that without a victim, that the victim is the state of Texas, okay? And we need to be smarter about dealing those things instead of just harder.
Do you have any specific reforms in mind that you would champion if you were elected to the legislature?
Well, absolutely. You know, in my experience in working in the DA's office and also volunteering in the local community, you know, what I've noticed is this. When we deal with juveniles, our state has become too soft on juveniles, meaning that when you are below the age of 17, you know, you can practically do anything short of murder and just get a slap on the wrist for it. And so juveniles who commit crimes over and over and over again are taught, guess what, there are no real consequences. But here's the thing. The day they tick over the 17, the day they hit 17 years old and one day, their punishment range is immense. And we have 17, 18, 19-year-old kids. And I call them kids because at that age, you're still a child, you know, no matter what the law says. That now will receive a criminal conviction for whatever else, for what minor crime they did. And that crime, that conviction will follow them for the rest of their lives. You'll never get it off. And once you have that conviction, for many types of crimes, your life is done. You will never go to college or a decent college. You will never get a scholarship. You will never get a tuition loan. Most jobs won't hire you. Most banks won't loan you money. You can't buy a house. You can't buy a car. All for a mistake made when you're 17 years old in one day. You know, and so I think we need to change our attitudes. We need to come more toward the middle. We need to have laws that reflect that, you know, juveniles that commit crimes over and over again need to be dealt with more harshly. We need to deal with them in a way that doesn't let them keep getting away with things. But young adults who commit crimes, we shouldn't destroy someone's life at age 16, 17, 18, 19 when they can have another chance, when they need another chance.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's obviously a correlation between education and crime, and as you know, Texas cut a bunch of money from the public education budget in 2011. And again, kind of what, you know, again, from your perspective of someone who kind of sees the business end of things, what would you want to do to help public education in this state?
No, I mean, Charles, you're absolutely right. I mean, education is one of the most closely tied things that relates to crime. Whenever you cut the education budget, you better plan on spending more on law enforcement. Because those kids that are not educated, they're going to become adults who are not educated. And when they're adults who are not educated, you know, they really don't see a future for themselves. If you don't see a future for yourself, then what you imagine yourself doing expands to, well, why shouldn't I do this? Why shouldn't I go break into this car? What I mean, who cares if I go to jail? I've got no real future anyways, you know? Here's the thing. You know, I've worked with kids in Sharptown High School. I tutored them. I've tutored the kids in Grad Lab. I tutored the kids in Twilight. And these are programs for, Grad Lab is a program for kids who have already gotten into trouble. Many of them are gang members. Many of them are dropouts. Many of them have disciplinary issues. But this is the thing that I learned from working with them. In the short period that I got to work with some of these kids, in a short amount of time, by giving them some positive attention, by giving them positive reinforcement to say, when you do bad things, you're going to get punished. When you do great things, you're going to get rewarded. You know what? Their attitudes change. You know, I met a kid who lost both his mom and his dad in short order. You know, and he was bouncing from foster care to foster care. And he was acting up in class. He was starting to join a gang. And, you know, he couldn't pay attention in class or he would always get in trouble. But as soon as you sat down with him and say, hey, focus, do this, do this, do this, do it. And then he finishes it and you go, man, that's fantastic. You did a great job. And all of a sudden, the next week he comes back, his attitude is totally different. His attitude is, hey, you guys, quit horsing around. I'm trying to finish this. You know, these kids are worth saving. You know, I grew up in this neighborhood. You know, I see the kids that are on the street, that are in the schools. These are kids that are worth saving. You know, these are kids that can be saved. But we have to have the effort and willingness to do it.
Well, we also have to have the money, and that was the problem in the 2011 budget. With the shortfall, the state wasn't,
absolutely,
the legislature wasn't interested in raising any money. Do you foresee the ability to do that in 2013 if you're elected, and where would you look for revenue sources to deal with problems like this and to fund education fully?
Well, first of all, this issue starts with one thing, a lack of priority, okay? You know, and this is the way I try to describe it to people. If you tomorrow had a heart attack or some serious illness and you survived it, you made it through, would you ever go to your doctor and say, "Doc, how little money can I give you or how little effort can I expend to just stay alive?" Would you ever say that?
No, probably not.
You would say, "Doc, I'm in trouble. I don't care what it costs. I don't care what I need to do. I'm going to do everything I can to be better," right? And here's the thing. You know, I preached this from day one. Public education is the foundation of the American dream, is the foundation of the middle class. Without the middle class, you do not have America. And this lack of priority is basically legislators saying, you know, all these other things are great for us and we like them and we're not going to get rid of them. But education, you know what, let's just do the minimum that we can. Even though we see the rest of the country, you know, going into deep recession, we see our jobs being exported to India, to China, to everywhere else that's catching up to us. You know, we've had the heart attack already, and yet we're saying, yeah, you know, how little can I do to just squeak by? You know, that's the first part. Here's the second part. You asked me about the budget. You asked me about where is the money going to come from, right? Okay. Here's what I have to say. The citizens of Texas have a choice to make. And they have a choice to make every election cycle that they're in. They have a choice to decide whether Texas is a rural state or Texas is a modern state. If Texas is a rural state, like Louisiana and Mississippi, where our economy is basically agriculture, we do some mining, we log some trees, and we'll call it a day, you know, then we can have rural taxes. We can have taxes like Mississippi and Louisiana who have, you know, the 50th and the 49th lowest taxes in the union. And we can have the same kind of services they do, or there's parts of the states over there that don't have running water and don't have electricity. That's great. Or our second choice is Texas is a modern state. A modern state like New York, like the equivalent of New York, California, Florida, or any other place that we're competing against. That we have modern amenities, we have modern roadways, we have internet, we have electricity everywhere. You know, and we have schools that produce workers for the 21st century. We have schools that produce workers that IBM, Intel, AMD, that those companies that produce good jobs want to hire. You know, here's the thing. Look at Austin. There's a reason why so many Fortune 500 high-tech companies are in Austin. You know, and that's a real simple reason. UT. It's a pipeline of good workers that's pushed out to these companies. Houston needs to do the same thing. Texas needs to follow that model. We need to keep up education. We need to keep up our job training. We need to push out good workers who are well-qualified and well-trained so that companies say, you know what, I want to be there because I know I'm going to get a constant supply of good workers and I'm going to pay them good wages.
Yeah. What's your opinion on the situation involving the women's health program?
You know, I was at the Planned Parenthood rally back last week. And, you know, I heard a lot of the speakers speak. And the only thing I could think of during that speech, or during all the speeches, was my mom. You know, my mom really gave me a lot of the strength that I have today. And she's the one that really pushed me to do things and encouraged me and helped me make me the person who I am today. And for someone to say that women's rights, women's health care is not important, or that, you know, because of a some political dogma, or some political issue, or some ideological boondoggle, that you say that we're going to get rid of women's ability to seek health care, to seek preventative care, it just makes me mad. I'm enraged by it, you know. I am on the side of people getting treatment, of people getting preventable health care at low cost before it becomes an issue. You know, at the Planned Parenthood rally, we heard, you know, speaker after speaker tell stories about how, you know, that they suffered an illness, that if they had earlier treatment, that they or someone else could have been saved or could have been spared a traumatic surgery or something like that. You know? And it's absurd to say, you know, the thing is, we're talking about the budget. Preventative care helps the budget. The more preventative care we do, the more maintenance we do ahead of time, the more money we save on the back end.
District 137 has changed a bit in redistricting. Talk to me a little bit about how you see the district now. What, if anything, you would like to see done to it as the litigation over redistricting progresses.
You know, 137, or the equivalent would be the new City Council J, has always been changing. And in the 25 years I've lived in that area, you know, it's gone from a mostly white, middle class neighborhood to a transition to an early immigrant neighborhood to now transitioning into a middle class, extremely diverse neighborhood where we have 30% black, 30% white, 30% Hispanic, and like 10% Asian. The neighborhood is constantly changing because there's constant flow and influx of people. You know, just because the lines are different, and the lines are only a little bit different from what it was originally, doesn't mean that the core district has really changed. The idea of 137 is still about diversity, it's still about growth, it's still about people living out the American dream. You know, every day I talk to people, I see new families coming in with kids who are selling in the area, and people that I know that have not been there for a while, that have recently moved in the last 5 years. You know?
Are there any issues specific to the district that you would want to address in the legislature?
Well, you know, the issue that comes up the most often is actually flooding, which is actually more of a city issue. But we'll talk about that in a second. You know, the stuff that's related to the legislature really has to do with crime. You know, as you walk through my neighborhood, as you walk through the houses, the residential area, one thing you would notice, that anyone would notice immediately, burglar bars. Okay? When I moved into that neighborhood 25 years ago, there was not a single house with a burglar bar on it. And many of these houses, you can tell the burglar bars are new. They're newly added to the house. And here's how you can tell. The doorbell is out of reach. Okay? The doorbell was not placed with the burglar bars in mind. So a lot of the houses, you can't actually even reach the door to knock on it. You can't even reach the doorbell. No, and you know they put those in within the last couple of years. And not just crime, but just the general attitude of the local area. I think, I don't know if you know about this, but actually Scott actually worked on it a lot.
Scott Hochberg
worked on it, the Carnival nightclub on the corner of Beechnut and 59. You know, it's a big issue that the neighborhood is so diverse, and you have this one nightclub that was causing tremendous amounts of crime, tremendous amounts of noise, traffic, and anything else that you would not want in your neighborhood. And things like that. You know, I think one of the things, and actually there's new nightclubs coming in. There's probably going to be another nightclub that's going to replace Carnival, and there's another nightclub over on the Richmond area that people are starting to deal with now. And, you know, one of the things I think the legislature needs to do is address You know, if you have an establishment that causes a lot of problems, the citizenry needs to be able to deal with it faster. You know, because it took us almost 3 years to shut down Carnival. You know, that's quite a long time if you live next door to it. You know, and you know, people talk about, you know, I know people have always asked me about Scott or Scott Hochberg and asked about his effect on dealing with education and things like that. Well, Scott was much more than that. You know, first and foremost was Scott was a leader in our local community, okay? Which is why the people of our neighborhood don't want to see him go. Not just because he was stalwart on education, but for us, for the people who live there. You know, he was important because if you had a problem, no matter if it was a state problem, if it was a federal problem, if it was a city problem, Scott got on it and he took care of it. If he couldn't take care of it, he would put you in the right direction. If he couldn't point you in the right direction, he would find the right person to talk to you. You know? And I think that's a lot of what our neighborhood, our district, expects from a state legislator.
Okay. And you have three opponents in the primary to replace Representative Hochberg. When people go to vote in May to choose a Democratic nominee for District 137, why should they vote for you and not one of your opponents?
Okay. Well, you know, I'm not going to talk about my opponents. But look, I'm the kid from the neighborhood who grew up, who's done really well, who has accomplishments, who has accolades. You know, I'm the person who has a professional job. I have a master's degree in public policy from UT. I've worked in the legislature. I work in the workforce commission. You know, I got my law degree. I spend my time fighting against crime, fighting for the people of Harris County. I spend time protecting people of Harris County. Okay. I'm heavily involved in the local area. You know, almost every person I talk to, you know, knows of some charity or some organization or some nonprofit that I've worked with. That they, oh yeah, we know that, we've been in that building, or we've seen that program before. Okay. Local kid, grown up, is now a professional, is now has the credentials and the connection to the community to lead. I think that's the type of person our community wants.
Okay. Gene Wu, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.